You're listening to Lavender Louisville, a Racing Louisville podcast.
Hello, Big Perp Nation, and welcome to another episode of Lavender Louisville, a podcast dedicated to Racing Louisville FC. My friends call me Joe Havelda.
My family calls me Cody Bruce.
On today's show, Racing lets the dogs out against Houston, takes a bite out of the Big Apple, then falls to the wish of the Cowardly Lion. Plus, a whole lot of roster moves and poetic justice is served. It'll all make sense in a bit, so let's kick off the first half. First up this week is the Challenge Cup game at home against Houston. It was Pups at the Pitch night at Lynn Family Stadium, and Racing made sure all the goodest boys and girls went home happy with a 3-0 win to stay undefeated in the Central Division. Cody, walk us through it.
Well, I have to say, before anything else, it was absolutely amazing being there with 300 dogs in the waterfront end. I mean, it's always a highlight for me. Breaking down into the minute by minute, we actually started this on a nail biter. In the first minute, we had a sloppy back pass that, if we keep allowing these kind of things to happen, I mean, it's going to wind up biting us. And I mean, it was just a few seconds into the game, and I took it as ominous for how we were going to be playing. But we settled in and made some motions. Fisher got a really good look running at the keeper. Now that apparently, you know, challenging the keeper is just part of our repertoire now.
Yep.
I'm a big, big fan. I mean, keep them honest, you know. Worst thing that happens is they get the ball away. But, you know, you may force them to go to the sides, you know, or, you know, you could just DeMello it.
Yep.
You know, you never know. In the sixth minute, we had a really good look through to Kanu, getting through to goal, called off sides, and it's dodgy, man. Like, they just went with the offsides call when it should have been, you know, something reviewed by VAR. So I don't know. I'm just going to leave that one.
I feel like this is becoming very common for racing games, and I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, we have VAR for a reason, and we have specific things that we can review. So we should review. Now, if the people upstairs just say, you know, check complete, and that's fine. But it seemed that one moved too quickly for them to do a review for how close that looked to be on the replay. So, like I said, I'm going to leave it alone. In the seventh minute, Kanu, playing as enthusiastic as ever, gets a yellow for a high boot. And, you know, having your striker on a yellow a fraction into the first half is not optimal.
Not only that, I didn't know this until I was watching the replay. That was her second yellow in the Challenge Cup, which means she is not available for the next Challenge Cup game. But if that game is while she's at the World Cup, then I hope that doesn't matter.
Realistically, I think that's going to be the case. Because, I mean, the next time we play is the 21st. I mean, that's still very early in the World Cup. So if they will allow her to serve her suspension while she's not in the country, you know, hey, you know, that works out for everybody.
No real loss.
Yeah. In the 14th minute, in a sight that is becoming near and dear to my heart, Howell just casually slays somebody to win the ball. It's like, you know, Jalen comes in and leaves the wreckage of another player in her wake as she goes away with the ball. Always, always a good time. And continuing to exert her will on the midfield, in the 17th minute, she has another interception, and she takes a shot from range. And, you know, another one of those things, you know, I really like the fact that we're leading the league in shots and shots on target, although I think we might have been eclipsed on one of those, because you never know. I mean, test the keeper, see what happens.
Yeah.
And just the same, the very next minute, Fisher fires from the edge of the box. So, I mean, as you can tell, for we had a stretch of about 5-6 minutes of just solid offense. It was a really well put together sequence for us. In the 23rd minute, Houston intercepts the ball where just outside of our defensive third. And that actually marked the first time that Houston had meaningful possession in our defensive third so far. So we had just completely eclipsed them for the first 60% of the half, and it wasn't even close. We get the ball back and go route one, tried to go for a long ball, and it fizzled out. Considering how, frankly, outmatched Houston felt like they were in this game, I don't think that they needed to do the long ball. We probably could have developed that and built something out of it. But, you know, as soon as they get the ball away, we get it back in the 28th minute. It's a really nice sequence. Fisher into DeMello, into Kanu, that she manages to chip it over the bar from 6 yards out. I mean, you know that Uchenna is just heartbroken over that one.
To be fair to her, the ball was slightly behind her. She was reaching back for it a little bit, and I think that's what got her foot under it.
Yes.
It was a great ball in, but her run just wasn't quite timed, so it was just slightly behind her, and she was reaching back for it. So,
yeah. But, you know, it could go either way. She could have drug it low instead, and it may not have had the power to get to the keeper. One way or the other, you know, it was just – it wasn't exactly a sitter, but it was pretty amazing that she managed to sky it from that close of a range.
Yeah.
And the 31st minute, just simply because I don't get to say her name enough, but Malay dribbles literally from box to box on the wing. I mean, just gets a hold of the ball right up by Katie Lund and drives it all the way into our offensive third. And she just doesn't get appreciated for that enough, I hear. That sequence leads to, in the 32nd minute, Fisher was narrowly denied a really good look on goal. I mean, that, in my opinion, should have been an opening goal. But there's a reason the keepers at this level are the keepers at this level. In the 37th minute, the Dash actually do put together a pretty dangerous attack, but broken up by Malay. In the 40th minute, Racing gets another good look on goal. So, I mean, quite obviously, the Dash can put together any kind of real sequence of possession. In the 44th minute, Kanu had a really good look on goal, just an inch too far right off the post. This one was put together with this gorgeous long ball from Howell. And the keeper was coming out to challenge, so Kanu just simply chips the keeper over to herself. And once she recovers the ball, she had too narrow of an angle to squeak it into the goal after she had the keeper beat. And I want to say that, you know, an inch to the left and it could have been in, but I watched it a couple times, and I feel that if she had stopped, played it back to herself, she may have had time to ticky-tacky it into the goal without having to count on that tight angle. But in the heat of the moment, just getting it fired off, yeah. I completely get it. It's nitpicky, and the only reason why I even bothered to say it is because I am just drooling for Kanu to get her sophomore goal. I mean, she's doing everything right except putting it between the bars.
I felt really bad for her in this game because she had so many looks, like the one that went in that they called offside for some reason, this one plus a couple other really, really close ones. And I would love to know how the coaching staff handles a player, especially a striker, in a game where they have three or four very narrow misses in a game where their teammates are scoring goals. Like, this was a 3-0 win. So I wonder how they handle a striker and a player like that to make sure they don't get down on themselves and they don't lose confidence.
Interesting. I mean, know.
Yeah. Especially with her getting so many good looks, but just not able to crack the nut. I mean, last I looked, she was leading the team in expected goals for everyone not named Savannah DeMello. But, you know, DeMello has several goals and assists, and Kanu, one goal, and I think two assists. And the 45th plus four, Borges sees Fisher completely unmarked and just hucks a long pass over to get Fisher in one-on-one with the keeper, and she absolutely buries it. And this one, I entirely credit to Ari Borges getting her head up, seeing that she had a player available, and getting the ball out of the box that she was in because she was getting shut down. Well, the Dash were so interested in trying to shut down Ari Borges that, you know, Kayla Fisher's not a slouch either. And and so, you know, Kayla Fisher right there, she's 4 yards from the keeper, and there's just no time for a reaction save. Just blast it right on by her. Beautiful, beautiful goal.
For her first professional goal. And not only that, she had a great game.
With, she really did.
So many of Louisville's good boys and girls in attendance. I think Kayla Fisher was best in show on that night.
I mean, with how well she was doing, she's absolutely puppy powered. And the smoke didn't even clear by the 45th plus six. Houston leaves DeMello open at the penalty arc. And just the scrum of getting to the ball, she chips the keeper from that narrow of a distance. I mean, just gets it up, over, and under the bar. I mean, Savannah DeMello is incapable of scoring a pedestrian goal. It's bangers only.
I actually asked her that after the game. I said, are you capable of scoring normal, regular goals, or is it bangers only? And she said, I don't think so, but it keeps it interesting.
And so the half ends at the 45th plus nine. I mean, at the end of regulation time, at 45 minutes, it was still absolutely Racing's game. And then in stoppage time, we blast two in within, I think I counted it at 98 seconds between.
I counted 93, a minute 33.
Okay.
So, yeah, call it a minute and a half-ish between goals.
And we go into the locker room firmly on the front foot. The beginning of the second half, not a whole lot of spark. And really, I think that there might have been just a little bit of us taking the foot off the gas on that. Because I'm even into 10 minutes into the half, I mean, Houston just looked absolutely deflated. The defenders are the only ones with any sign of life. I mean, they're struggling to put together any kind of sequence, let alone an offensive sequence. And, you know, they're floundering. But a couple minutes later, 57th minute, Borges clips a pass from Houston, runs to the penalty arc, and draws the foul. You know, one of those beautiful sequences that she does where it's just step over, step over, step over, and then hard cut to one side or the other. And, you know, the defenders don't know what to make of it. They just kind of poke at the ball and get Ari's foot instead. And off that kick, she actually challenges the keeper. I mean, it was really well played in. And again, just one of those things. Keepers at this level, I mean, they are up here for a reason. It was a really, really good shot. 68th minute. Houston puts together their first possession in our defensive third in the second half. I mean, I mentioned how I kind of have a soft spot for Houston, and it was a little sad watching them struggle through half of the second half with nothing to show for it. I mean, couldn't even get barely out of their half of the field. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved that for Racing, but Houston was just absolutely dogged in this one. No pun intended.
Sure. No, I wonder if that was somewhat by their own fault, though, because it was a Challenge Cup game and they rotated like 8 of their players, like their entire defensive line and their keeper. So, and Racing didn't, because Racing has made no bones about the fact that they're going to put out strong sides in the Challenge Cup. They want to make it through. Houston at the time was sitting in second place in our group, and the best second place moves on to the semifinals as well. And I'm not going to question, because I'm not a Houston fan. This isn't a Houston podcast, but I feel like they could have put out a stronger side and tried to keep that second place, which is now occupied by Kansas City of all teams. But I don't know.
Well, you and I talked before the game, and I pointed out that their offensive trio was the best that they could put out. So yeah. I really feel that what they were trying to do is come out, sucker punch us with an early goal or two, and then, you know, sit back and absorb pressure. Not taking into account that somewhere in the last handful of games, Racing has turned into this defensive powerhouse.
Yeah.
70th minute. Borges manages to almost get it into the upper 90 in her very last action before she happens to get subbed out. It's like she knew it was coming, so she wanted, you know, one last shot at goal and almost pulled it off.
Yeah.
A 73rd minute, Pickett, free kick from outside the box. I mean, it's Pickett doing one of the best services that I have seen her do for Racing. It was perfectly weighted. It was perfectly timed. And Goins just comes in, nods it down. The keeper was completely unable to follow where the ball was going. Didn't even make a move on it. So we're up 3-0 and flying. 76th minute. We did actually have a little bit of a scary moment. Lund was way off her line, and there was a little bit of a miscommunication with her defender. And, you know, there was a Dash player lurking about, you know, a little bit of a bobble there, and who knows, they could have pulled one back. So just another one of those things. Lund still kind of a young keeper. Not even a mistake, just a worrisome moment.
Mm-hmm.
77th minute. Hey, look at that. It hasn't even been 10 minutes and they got into our defensive third again. Progress. I mean, for them, honestly, that was the best pair of sequences they'd put together. And it lasted for all of about 48 seconds before Ellie comes in and Pikiamsa puts this long ball out to Monahan. I mean, I don't exaggerate saying that it probably traveled about half the length of the field and perfectly weighted. Unfortunately, it did get turned around, but just as quickly as it came back towards us, we send another long pass from Baggett that almost makes it through to Goins, where, I mean, it would have almost been a sitter at that point. But hang tight, because the most important part of the game comes in the 79th minute. Amina Ekic comes back from injury to score her first minutes of gameplay since being injured in Australia. Highlight of my day.
Yeah. So happy for her. The only annoying part was that we were in the waterfront end, because I had brought the best good girl of all of them to the game. Nimi was at the game, so we were in the waterfront end. all the action from that point on was on the far end. Was really, really excited to see Amina come in, but then couldn't quite see what she was doing until I watched the replay. And she looked good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to trumpet too much. I mean, you can definitely see where there's a little bit of rust. She's a little less crisp on her passing than I know that she's capable of. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for somebody that's fighting her way back to get regular minutes, I think she did a good showing.
Yeah. And if you haven't listened to it already, we put out our interview with Amina last week. So that is up. Go give that a listen. She's awesome.
So for about the next 10 minutes, it's just kind of a box to box affair. Houston really dug in like some ticks, and we could not quite break through and get any more good looks. And in the closing minutes, in the 90th, Houston manages to get into our decent defensive third for the fourth time in the game. And they mill about in there for just about a minute and a half before we turn it around and the whistle blows at 90 plus two. Good guys win 3-0.
Yep. Yeah. Let's run through the stats, because these are not surprising in a 3-0 scoreline. Possession, Racing had 58% to Houston's 42. Oof. Shots, Racing had 20 total shots with 9 on target. Houston had 7 shots with 1 on target. Passing, Racing had an 80% pass accuracy to Houston's 76%. Racing had 3 offsides, grumble, grumble, to Houston's 1. And Racing had 8 corners to Houston's 1. So even the stats show how dominant that game was for Racing. For our predictions, I called this a 2-1 win. You called it a 2-0 win, so we both got that right. FIFA called it a 4-3 loss. So thanks a lot, FIFA.
I'm going to start calling when I say the clean sheets as a tiebreaker.
Yeah. All right, so next up. Racing hosted Gotham at home on Spongeteenth / Father's Day, whatever you want to call it. It was the first meeting between the two this season, and Racing was looking to make up ground on the top 6. They did just that, securing all 3 points in a tough 2-0 win. So let's break it down. In the 6th minute, Pickett gets a ball over the top to Wong in the box. It's called for offside. In the 8th minute, DeMello gets a ball over the top to Tembi, who gets 1v1 with the keeper and has her shot saved, but is also flagged for offside. Basically, in the first 15 minutes, Racing's trying to play long balls over the top to runners in behind the defense. Wasn't quite working. And I do have a note here. It's not very nice, but I'm going to say it
The 15th minute.
Huh?
And the note in the 15th minute. Is this Neely Martin?
No.
Oh.
What did Neely do? I don't have Neely in the 15th minute.
Oh, Neely didn't do anything because Howell's just absolutely went over top of her.
I did write that one down for some reason. No, I'll get to that in a sec, because I'm talking about the Racing was playing long balls over the top, right? In the first 15 minutes or so, like trying to play the long ball in behind the defensive line. It wasn't quite working. They kept getting called for offside or nothing was coming from it. Here's the note that I have, and I do want to discuss this very briefly. Did everyone in the league get faster, or did Kirsten Davis get slower? Because I feel like last year, and even in our preseason, we talked about Kirsten Davis's speed, where they would play those long balls and she would usually get to them. And in our preseason, you know, preview, we were talking about the Mallory Swanson problem and how we had that on our team with Kirsten Davis. I haven't seen that once this year from her, to be honest with you. So I don't know exactly what's going on there. So I did just want to bring that up. But yes, also around that time, Neely Martin, our dear little friend that used to play with us and is Savannah DeMello's best friend in the world, got absolutely murderized by Sav's other best friend, Jalen Howell. Wasn't very nice. It was kind of mean because Jay probably is like twice her size. It was clean. She just destroyed her. And like you were saying last game, anytime Jay wants to go bulldozer on anyone, I'm here for it. I love it. It's a physical league. That's what I've said it before. That's what I love about women's soccer, is that they beat the crap out of each other. They don't go down at the slightest touch. Well, Jay is the embodiment of that, man. She destroys people.
I'm going to call out Benton with Vamos Verados. He nails it with the alliteration. He wasn't the first one to say it, but he's the one that put together my favorite way to say it. The midfield murder machine.
Yeah. Love you, Jay. Don't ever change. Also, Jay, if we ever meet, we are friends. Please don't murder me like that. All right, moving on. In the 18th minute, Bruninha gets into the box and does a cheeky little back heel to Ryan, who is a pretty nice low shot, but it was saved fairly comfortably by Lund. In the same minute, DeMello plays Tembi out wide, who works her way into the box by breaking the ankles of two defenders in a row, but then puts her shot right at the keeper. I don't care if anyone gets annoyed with me singing Tembi's praises, because I've been saying it for a long time. She is special. I don't think the rest of the league really is prepared for her. She's amazing.
Which is, it's that, I mean, that's wild, because I mean, this isn't the first time that they've seen Catalana play, but you know, it has been, half a decade. I mean, I guess they figured she may have lost a step. No, I look back and I saw some video. I think she's faster.
Believe it. She's so teeny tiny too. Like, I don't know how she's that fast. She's Laura Millay's size, and they're both so fast. Like, they just move their legs so very quickly. Yeah. Anyway, 20th minute, Lynn Williams blows by both Carson Pickett and Abby Erceg and gets a shot off, but again, it's straight at Katie Lund. 21st minute, Tembi intercepts a pass and blows by everyone. Neely Martin tried to pull her back, but missed because she was already gone. She just like Neely reached out and just whiffed. Tembi goes to play Davis in, but the last defender back gets just enough on it to get it back to the keeper. 23rd minute. It's the Tembi show, man. I'm telling you, every one of my notes is Tembi. 23rd minute. DeMello feeds Tembi out wide. Her cross is parried out by the keeper. DeMello and Neely Martin, best friends, both go for it at the same time and knock each other over. The ball falls to Wong Shuang, whose shot is blocked. Racing players in the box are calling for a handball because Neely and Sav are both still on the ground, and it looks like it might have touched Neely's arm. But the ball falls right in front of DeMello, who says, oh, gets up from the ground and then buries it.
Yeah.
There's so much happening on this play.
The first thing that I wrote down for this goal was tenacity. I mean, you had Racing players swarming inside the box that were refusing to give up. And it culminates with, yet again, Sav picks herself up off the ground and does a 180 on the ball to fire it. I mean, she has to step away from goal to get to that ball and then turns around bottom corner through traffic.
There is something interesting that I noticed on this on the replay, is that there was one defender who could have taken one step to the right and blocked that shot. But when Wong took her shot, her follow-through looked like it might have clipped that defender on the shin. That defender bent over and put her hand in the air as if asking for play to be stopped, which is never going to happen in that situation if it's not a head injury. Also, as soon as the ball went into the net, she was miraculously fine. So I thought that was a really strange move by her, like doing that whole bent over, like, oh, stop, I'm hurt. when everyone's in the box and the attacking team has a chance to score and it's not a head injury, never going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So, thanks for giving up on the play. We'll take the goal. 35th minute. Gotham gets a very long shot right at Lund, but she spills it out for a corner. I don't really know what happened here. It was right at her. She normally just cradles those and it's fine. It must have had some like weird dip on it as it was in the air because she spilled it. Luckily, she spilled it out of bounds and not into her own goal. 38th minute. I don't understand this one. We're going to have to talk about it. Tembi's breaking on the ball. She gets absolutely taken out by Bruninha. Plain as day. But Tembi gets called for the foul. The only thing I can think of in this is that as Bruninha was fouling her, Tembi lifted her arm and kind of hit her in the face. But it was at the same time as Bruninha's foul. Even the commentators on the replay didn't understand what was happening there.
In my opinion, I feel that it was offsetting fouls with the advantage given to Bruninha because the contact to the face, even though accidental, is a worse foul. That on its own could have gotten Tembi a yellow.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird call. I didn't like it.
Yeah. And I mean, until we saw the replay, I thought we were going to get that call plain as day. But after seeing that hand come up and swat right in the face, yeah, I think Tembi, the only reason she didn't get a yellow is that she was at no point in that sequence looking at Bruninha. If she had looked at Bruninha first and that arm came up, I believe that was a card all day long.
I guess my side of it is, as Bruninha was closing down, Tembi taps the ball away, and as they collide, which as Bruninha is clearly going for a professional foul to stop the break, Tembi puts her arm up to protect herself. I don't know. I still feel like the obvious professional foul is the foul. I don't know. I didn't like it. I'm not going to beat it to death, but it was dumb. Anyway. Yeah. We got so much to get through, so we're not going to harp on it too long. 43rd minute, Ellie gets a beautiful long ball to Tembi out wide, who gets into the box and thinks about her shot just a little too long and ends up getting her shot blocked. 44th minute, Jalen Howell gets fouled just outside the box, and DeMelo's free kick is just wide. That gets us into halftime. We're up 1-0. And 31 seconds into the second half, we get a fun little reminder of why you always get back to your seats before kickoff. DeMelo plays a beautiful long ball to Davis on the sideline. I was dogging Davis earlier. I'm giving her all the credit in the world for this because then she holds up her defender and waits for Tembi to make a run, lays the ball perfectly into her pass where all Tembi has to do is first time it right past the keeper. Yes, it got a little deflection on the keeper, but I think that was going in either way. That's Tembi's first goal for Racing and her first goal after coming back from injury. I said when she gets her first goal, her teammates are going to lose their minds for her, and they absolutely did. So 31 seconds and a half, and we're up 2-0 against Gotham.
Yeah. Something I want to point out about Davis's hold-up play. I mean, as well as she did to get the ball forward, I mean, she slotted that perfectly between a couple of defenders in order to get that played into Hatlana. So not only did she develop the play all the way into the offensive third, not only did she have the vision for the hold-up play, but that was an inch-perfect pass.
Mm-hmm. 51st minute, Jalen Howell robs Allie Long. I mean, straight grand theft. It's now a 3-on-2 break for Racing. She passes wide to Kirsten Davis, who smartly returns it to Howell for an absolute sitter in front of the box, in front of the goal, and skies it from about the penalty spot. Wide open, has to be 3-0, puts it over the bar. You want to talk about someone who wants one back?
She collapsed onto the ground with her head and her hands.
Yeah.
Oh, that was painful to watch.
Not painful to watch. Thanks for the segue. In the 54th minute, Lynn Williams gets a shot blocked. DeMelo gets a long pass out to Tembi, who's all alone. He's holding it up for a second and then says, fine, I'll do it myself. Just runs all the way up the field. Blows by everyone. She's so freaking fast. And her shot, she just kind of scuffed the shot, and it was just inches wide of the far post. She almost had two in that game. 57th minute, Gotham makes a triple sub. Mewis, Onumanu, and Fairley get subbed in. And I put that in there specifically because that is a lot of talent coming in all at once. And did kind of turn the game a little bit in Gotham's favor. Immediately after that, Lynn Williams starts causing problems. She gets ball into the box. Lund can only tip it away dangerously, and Racing clears it out for a corner. Ends up being two corners in a row. On the second one, Kelly O'Hara is wide open, unmarked, far post, gets a beautiful header just off the post.
And with enough power that when you listen to it on the replay, I mean, it rings like a bell. If that were just a little tighter to goal, Lund would have had no chance.
I mean, maybe 2 inches to the right, and that's a goal.
Yeah.
If that had gone in, this would have been a different game. I mean, we're talking 30 plus minutes left in the game at this point. And with the strong subs that they brought in, Gotham kind of started controlling the last 30 minutes of this game. If that had gone in, we likely could have been talking about the fact that we blew another 2-0 lead.
Not unrealistic, but as much credit as I would like to give to Gotham for the tactical adjustments and the response for being down 2-0, I mean, that really felt like it was the last really strong effort that Gotham put in.
Yeah, fair.
Because by that point, I mean, we had locked in, and you know, it was almost a freakish occurrence inside what was otherwise a really strong defensive performance yet again.
That's fair. 71st minute, DeMelo intercepts a pass, gets pulled down by Ali Long just outside the penalty box. Long gets a yellow. I think she was getting pretty frustrated by that point.
Mm-hmm.
78th minute, Carson Pickett fouls Kelly O'Hara just outside the box. And that, when I say just outside the box, like one more step, I think, and that's a penalty.
Yeah.
It was a yellow for Pickett. Christy Mewis just skied the free kick over the goal, so that was nice of her. 89th minute, Lynn Williams picks up a yellow for a high boot. She kicked Jalen Howell in the chest as they were going for a ball inside Racing's box. So high boot gets called for a yellow. Not very nice. But I do like Lynn Williams. 4 minutes of stoppage time in this game lasted 9.5 minutes. And I bring that up because I want to give a shout out to the Lavender Legion for keeping Hey Jude going that whole time. I actually really dig this new tradition of singing that for second half stoppage time when we're up or at least tied. I think it's fun. I think it gets the crowd into it. It's a feel good moment, especially in a game like this where we're up 2-0 against a really strong team. I think it just adds to the atmosphere. But when 4 minutes of stoppage time goes up on the board and it lasts 9.5 minutes, good on you guys for keeping that going the whole time.
Right. There is one question that I don't think anyone's really asked. When Lynn Williams got the high boot for kicking Jalen Howell in the chest, did anyone check to see if Lynn Williams was okay?
Did it hurt her foot? I think she's all right. She is on the plane out to California for the send-off for the World Cup. So, yeah. I don't typically make a habit of going around kicking brick walls, but hey, teach their own. All right, stats for this game. These are actually kind of interesting.
Because if you just looked at the stats, you'd think Gotham won this game 2-0. For possession, Racing had 41% to Gotham's 59. Racing had 13 total shots with 3 on target. Gotham had 20 shots with 8 on target. Pass accuracy, Racing had a pretty low 71% to Gotham's 78%. Racing was called offside 5 times, Gotham once. Racing had 2 corners, and Gotham had 7. So lopsided stats for what the actual result was. Predictions on this game. I called it a 3-1 win. You called it a 1-0 win. So sure, points for the clean sheet, but I get but I get points for calling multiple goals.
Fair.
Here's the best part. If you missed it, FIFA predicted this a 6-1 loss for Racing. Just going to let that hang for a minute. FIFA was the wrongest it's been all season. All right. And finally, the away game last weekend against the North Carolina Courage. This was obviously going to be a tough test on the road for Racing, as they have never once taken a single point off of the Courage. In 7 total matches played, Racing has lost all 7. Cody, walk us through the 1-0 loss.
I mean, it's just that is a jaw-dropping stat. I can't find anything in higher tier professional soccer that even comes close. It's absolutely absurd. So the cool part is we actually did do a lot of really good work in this game. And indeed, in the days leading up to it, you and I were talking where I thought that it would be more likely that we'd get a 0-0 draw than to lose 1-0. And then we went to 538, and I was told that I was flatly wrong with that assumption. But we start off strong. In the 3rd minute, we almost play Katlana in on the counter. So, you know, on the good foot, just seeing if we can't get Tembi behind him, give him hell. In the 6th minute, DeMello tried to chip the keeper from distance. The first half hour of this game was literally just kind of a highlight reel of our almost theirs. In the 11th minute, Katlana carries a significant distance forward, draws a corner, didn't get anything from it. But by the 15th minute, our possession has flipped and Racing has moved into a low block. Now, I know that we give a lot of lip service that we're supposed to be a high-pressing, possession-oriented team, and I think a lot of credit's got to be given that there's times that's just not the right way to play.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we come up against a team that, well, we really don't want to be doing that, yeah, okay, we'll go to the low block where, you know, we're defending in our defensive third and just making ourselves so compact and tight that we're a fortress. And then for funsies, you know, play these nice, quick development pass-throughs that aren't quite a counter, but are just a little too quick to call build-up play. And I think that that is one of the things that's becoming a trademark of this Racing team is those fast buildups, 3, 4, 5 passes, and we've gone from box to box.
Mm-hmm.
But by the 15th minute, we've had 35% possession, but all the good looks. I mean, the Courage, they're content with just passing it around the back, and we're content to just let them pass it around the back because if they're at the halfway line, you know, not really going to have a good look on goal.
Yep.
In the 20th minute, DeMello throws a high boot, and we're really lucky she didn't get a yellow on that one because she wound up splitting her defender's head open. And, you know, she's really close on accumulation, so we really don't want to see yellows for quite some time. Granted, it's not going to be for some time, but I mean, she's got to come back eventually.
Yeah.
In the 23rd minute, another one of our, you know, quick build up counters. And I want to say that we put a similar sequence like that together a dozen times this game. But this one was called back for another really weak offsides, which, you know, I feel that they would have had a good look in on goal, but play was stopped by the offside. So that's, I don't like it. By the 25th minute, we kind of pivoted towards working it over the top rather than build up play. In the 27th minute, we actually put together our best string of possession in the middle third of the field that we had had up to that point. Because we had just simply acquiesced two-thirds of the field to the Courage. And the quick counters weren't working. We tried going over the top. And so, hey, let's try build-up play. We actually do string together a nice sequence that gets us all the way up to our offensive third. And we draw a free kick. Howell turns a free kick on target, forces a save for our first shot on target. And by now, we've kind of amped up our confidence, and you can see where we've moved to a mid-block. We're trying to occupy that middle third of the field, and we've got the Courage pinned back, not quite in their defensive third, but about as far back in the middle third of the field as you can get without being in the box. And I felt that we were really starting to look good, get strings of possession put together, really start pinning the Courage down. I felt that we were about to start moving into the high press, and it's always dangerous when we get teams pinned back like that. And sure enough, in the 32nd minute, we've got another great stretch of possession leading to a blocked shot. And right about then, you know, the Courage, they put together a nice long stretch of possession that ranged from defensive to middle third, and nothing happened. I mean, they'd push forward, we'd shut them down, and then they'd just retreat back. And frankly, about 10 minutes of the most boring soccer that I could imagine. In the 41st minute, we've got another pretty decent build-up, and Katlana fires a shot right at the keeper. I mean, another one of those really good ones where, as much as I think Kanu could get her finishing a little more crisp, I say the same thing about Temby at the moment, because once she tightens up her finishing, she could put away a goal a game.
Yep.
Easily.
Well, she's a volume shooter too. Like, she's going to take 5-6 shots a game.
Yeah.
And she'll be a low percentage conversion, but with a high number of attempts.
And I'm completely cool with that, as long as we get them to go in on occasion, right?
Yeah.
Altogether, it was a pretty quick and fruitless half for both teams. We by no means were in the running for possession, but we led in shots and shots on target. So, I mean, the numbers prove out that the Courage are content to play the waiting game, and we were content to try to smack them on the counter, which I am just so thrilled that that's part of our toolbox now. If nothing else, it's a lot more exciting than marching halfway up the field and turning it over.
Well, that, and I forgot to mention this at the end of the Gotham game. After the Gotham game, Racing had only allowed one goal in the previous 5 matches in all competitions. So, that, like you were talking about, all of a sudden we have this just ridiculous defense. And they scored 8 in that time, so they basically won 8-1 in those 5 games, which is insane. So going into North Carolina, we know that North Carolina is one of the highest possession teams. They are going to keep the ball and pass it around and dilly-dally a little bit. It's on the road. We've never beaten them. So I almost liked the game plan of, screw it, let's try to get out of here 0-0.
I ain't mad at it.
No. It was boring, trashes, like you said, but I would have taken that 100%.
Yeah. And I believe it was at halftime that Jeff Greer called out that, you know, Racing hadn't given up a goal in like 450 something minutes. So, Jeff, sorry, I'm blaming you for this one. So, yeah, coming into the second half, Katlana sees, in my opinion, a really weak yellow. She's another one that her enthusiasm, we're going to wind up seeing her sit out for accumulation. I mean, yeah. It's going to happen.
Yeah. I like the spunk, though.
Yes.
I ain't mad at it.
52nd minute. The really great sequence that DeMello has a pass through to Katlana. And if it were meant to be a shot, it was just wide of goal. And if it was meant to be a pass in to Davis, Davis was just a step and a half late to that back post. Mm-hmm. Everything about that sequence looked and felt like we were about to go up 1-0 right up until it skiffs out for a goal kick. That I was absolutely heartbroken by that.
Yeah.
56th minute, Howell sees yellow. If anyone's keeping track on the season, that's her fourth. One more and she will be sitting out for accumulation. Fortunately, we've only got a couple of league games before everybody comes back and we'll have reinforcements in the midfield. So as long as she can not get a yellow in these next couple of league games, I think we're in good shape.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I know. So I took a note in the 65th minute that all we're seeing is just box-to-box play. Nobody's getting any really good looks. Nobody's making any egregious turnovers. There's no big fouls. It's just moving the ball up the field, losing it. They move the ball up the field and lose it. Now, granted, their stretches of possession are twice as long as ours, but that's really all we're seeing at this point. And really, that's all that we see up until the 73rd minute, where there's a scrum in the box, and we just had one too few defenders in place for the number of courage players. And all the credit for Katie Lund. She gets low and stops a shot from basically point blank.
Yeah.
And she was able to turn it away. Unfortunately, she turned it away directly to the foot of a courage player who was able to squeak it right in between Lund on the ground, who was scrambling to get a paw on it, and Malay, who was standing at the goal line just for something like this. And credit, I mean, it was slotted between them to where neither one could really do much about it.
Yeah, it was a smart finish.
Yeah, so there it is. We're down 1-0. And I mean, that's my criticism. If we could have had one more purple shirt in the box, I don't think it would have gone in. Now, who that would have been with the way the play developed, I don't know, but you know, that's what happened. In the 81st minute, Monahan sees yellow. I only bring that up because she's a big part of our offensive engine. And considering that Katlana is going to sit out for a yellow at some point, we don't need to for Monahan to be out the very next game.
Yeah, fair.
In the 82nd minute, if you remember back a couple of weeks, there were actually defenders who went up for save of the week. And Ersig, she really needs a nomination for the last ditch block that she pulled off. I mean, Courage are in on goal. The shot was imminent. And Abby Ersig just gets her legs in at just the perfect time and shows exactly what a world-class center back looks like. It was inch perfect and absolutely kept Racing in the game for the next 8 minutes.
If you were a young soccer player out there learning to play defense, or if you are a coach of young soccer players, show this clip 1,000 times. And learn from it. because that was some of the best defending I've seen in a very long time.
Oh, for sure. And we struggled to put together much of anything at this point. The Courage, they seem pretty content to actually give us a little bit of possession, but we don't really do a whole lot with it. We have trouble getting out of the middle third of the field. By the 88th minute, we huck a long ball to Goins. That another really, really good look, and then just happens to send it wide. And at that point, the Courage have a hold of the ball, and Courage do what Courage do, and they maintain possession for the duration and run the clock out. And bad guys win 1-0.
Yeah. You know that we normally watch the games a second time for analysis for the podcast. I didn't get to this one. I was going to, but I lost power in the storm on Sunday night and didn't get back till Monday afternoon. So it kind of threw off my rewatch schedule. I wasn't overly disappointed that I didn't have to watch this one again. So thanks for the recap. That was very helpful.
Oh, dear listeners, he was already saying that he didn't want to watch it and he wasn't going to watch it and was throwing a tantrum.
Not quite. Nah, this one just sucked, man. It just sucked all around because, like we said, getting out of there nil nil would have been bouncing off the walls. I said that beforehand, and for a very long time, it looked like exactly that was going to happen. And then just the dagger, and in such a stupid way too. Like that goal was such a random scrum, just pinballing around, and then just gets put away. Like I can't even fault anyone on that, really. I don't know. This one sucked, especially when we were on this nice run. It's like we talked about, they'd allowed one goal in six games before that. They were cruising, and then they cruised right into this white whale that we just can never seem to catch. But let's go through the stats. 41% possession for Racing to North Carolina's 59. Not a huge surprise. Racing had 10 total shots with only two on target. North Carolina had 12 with two on target. Pass accuracy was 74% for Racing, 80% for North Carolina. 4 offsides for Racing, 1 for North Carolina. 4 corners for Racing, 5 for North Carolina. Our predictions. I really wanted that point. I called this a 1-1 draw. I was wrong. That puts me at 7 out of 16 on the season. You nailed this one. You called it a 1-0 loss. Puts you at 11 out of 16. FIFA actually called this a 3-3 draw, which I thought was very nice of them. But they were still wrong, and they're at only 1 out of 16 on the season. Yeah. I can't even remember which one they got right.
Oh, I mean, whatever they got right, you know, the scoreline was wacky.
All right, well, there's the halftime whistle. Let's get into halftime adjustments because I don't feel like we had a whole lot last episode. We have a whole lot this episode. There's a lot happening on the roster front. First and foremost, Satara Murray and Racing mutually agreed to end her contract. She is gone. I was a little sad. I really liked Satara Murray. I thought she was very good and effective last year. I thought she was one of our better center backs last season. And then this year she played in exactly one game. I don't know why or what was going on there, but something was, and they've parted ways. So Satara is gone, freeing up a roster spot.
Now, let's be fair. You and I both said that the game that she was in, she didn't really look up to speed. So,
well, I said for like the first 15 minutes, she looked a little rusty, and then she really started settling in. But she hadn't played. That was the only game of the year that she played.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that this could very well have just simply been performance-based and looking at clearing space for World Cup. I mean,
yeah.
Aside from that, it really does ask if there are maybe some others coming too.
Yeah, the interesting thing I also found is that they basically just cut her. They didn't sell her or get any money for her. So I don't know what the ramifications are for that, but basically, yeah, Satara Murray's out. Loved Satara Murray. According to Carson Pickett, she's the funniest human alive. So she'll be missed there. Best of luck to her wherever she ends up. Riley Parker is back from loan. So that she is no longer on loan. So now she is taking up a roster spot. And if my maths is correct, we counted right beforehand because we still have some movement coming with Nadia Nadim will be coming back from injury, hopefully very, very soon. Jordan Bloomer is now on D45, so she is not counting against roster space. Jessica McDonald is taking the season off. She's not counting against roster space. Hillary Beal is back from loan. That puts us at 25 active roster, and the cap is 26. So all signs there point to someone is most likely coming in as soon as the transfer window opens for a roster spot. And then we get to play the fun game of national team replacement players who are more short term and don't count against roster spot. Because trumpets please, Savannah DeMelo got called up for the World Cup. I know that's breaking news to everyone listening. None of you knew that until I just said it. But very, 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 very excited for Savannah. That puts six players from Racing Squad in the World Cup. And depending on how far their countries progress, a few of them could be gone for a while. The U.S. is obviously the favorite. If the U.S. makes it all the way to the final, then DeMelo is not back until after the Angel City game on August 19th. So lots going on here. What do you see happening in the next couple of weeks to fill, to plug some of these holes?
So if we look at who's traveling, we've got DeMelo, Schwong, Chidiak, and Borges, all nominally midfielders, although we do tend to deploy Schwong as a forward on the wing. We have Kanu and Khatlana in forward positions. Fortunately, with Ekic coming back and Parker, you know, finally attending Racing, and hopefully Nadia Nadim starting to get minutes, I don't think that we're going to have to worry so much about our forwards.
I agree. And with Parker going, scoring goals.
Yeah. but it does lend that I have a lot of concerns about our midfield because since we're taking for granted that Lauren Millay is going to be playing right back, that gives us nominally in the midfield Kayla Fisher, Jalen Howell, and Jordan Baggett. End of list.
Yeah.
So there it is. There's our need. Sign us like three or four midfielders, please. I mean, we don't have a particularly grueling stretch of play, but just depth, you know, if Jalen, you know, pulls up a little bit lame and needs to sit out for a game.
Or gets a yellow.
Don't speak it into the universe, man. I mean, we need somebody to fill that slot. And I mean, considering how Zanetta Wine came to us as a national team replacement player and wound up making full roster, I mean, you know, this might be a good chance for us to try some people out. Who those people are, I couldn't tell you because I would not have said Zanetta Wine. Yeah. You know, that's who we need to pull in on this Racing side.
Well, here's some fun things to play with because you have Eli Pikiyamsa who can play center back or defensive mid. Now, we just lost a center back with Satara Murray leaving, but in the Pups at the Pitch game against Houston, towards the end of the game, Zanetta Wine subbed in. She took the left back spot, and that moved Carson Pickett to center back. And she did pretty well. So there's some weird things that could happen there. You could move Ellie up to Howell's spot if needed and shuffle the back around a little bit. We still have a Rebecca Holloway in there. And you could even start playing around with the formation a little bit, because also in that Houston game, I feel like they really deployed, instead of the 4-3-3, they deployed a 4-2-3-1 that had Howell and Ari as the two deep-lying midfielders, and then had, who was in that game? Anu up front, Kayla Fisher, Monahan, and DeMello as that three with Kanu up front. So you can mess around with that a little bit too, you know, because Nadia, I know she basically considers herself a true forward, a true nine, but she can play the 10 with someone like Kirsten Davis or Parker Goins in front of her. Kayla Fisher is more of an attacking mid. She can slot into that 10. She can slot in a little wider. Amina's back. She can play, you know, right wing. There's a lot of things they could do there. We do have more depth and more talent that, like we've been talking about. So I think you're going to see some shuffling. I do think we are going to have new faces coming in. I definitely think a permanent signing is coming with a couple national team replacements. But we also have a pretty favorable stretch of games during that time, mostly Challenge Cup games. So it we'll get to it, because like we have two league games, then essentially three Challenge Cup games, and then I think Angel City, where when most of our players most should be back by then. So I don't know, it's going to be fun to kind of see what this shuffling looks like, who gets deployed where, what new faces we see, who the new signing might be.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, I think there's still the possibility that there might be another cut before the end of the season. Just as a thought, I mean, if we do get a national team replacement player that comes in and balls out, I mean, we're going to have to make space for him, and that's going to come at somebody's expense. Well, even if that doesn't happen, I mean, we got to look at the possibility that we've got this transfer window coming open and we've only got one slot available.
And that one slot is because Jordan Bloomer is on extended injury, so she's not counting against the roster space. If she comes back for the end of the season, then we're one over the cap.
There's just a lot of questions there. And considering that, you know, that transfer window is opening very soon, I mean, I'm hoping for signings. I mean, not just national team replacement. I'm hoping for somebody of substance to come from overseas, not necessarily an international player, but maybe reclaiming an American player that's been coming from overseas that has some NWSL experience, give us a little more depth. Because as much as Abby Ersig is, you know, a terrifyingly robust woman, I mean, I think she'll wind up putting more minutes up than Lund by the end of the season.
She scared us in that Gotham game right at the end. Yep. She went down clutching her knee.
Yeah.
And
it's like, what does our center back pairing look like without Abby Ersig?
Yeah, it's Lester and Pikki Jamsa, essentially.
And as much as those two have impressed me this season, I think that a good chunk of that is because Ersig is so good that she makes the people around her better.
Well, exactly. They've been looking very good, and a lot of that is, not to take anything away from them, but because they've been listening to Abby. You know, she directs that entire quadrant of the field, that entire third of the field in the defense. So without that maestro back there, who would step in and be that voice? Hopefully, yeah, we don't have to find out.
But I mean, even then, you know, with the thought of moving Pikki Jamsa into that central defensive mid position to give a little more depth behind Howell, who's our center back? I mean, yeah, we've
Person got Pickett. Apparently, yeah. I don't know. That's nuts.
Yeah, serviceable, but I mean, that's. I've been wanting a marquee center back for ages. I finally really got one with Abby Ersig, and now I'm just going to be greedy and say I want two.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset with it. All right. Well, there's the whistle for the second half. So let's look ahead. And we only have two games to preview because we're getting into this portion of the summer with the World Cup where it's going to get weird, where we only have like one or two games. First one being OL Reign away this Saturday, July 1st at 3:30 p.m. I think this one could be interesting.
Oh, yes.
Because this is a team that I think they've beaten us once and we've tied every other game that we've ever played them, if I'm remembering correctly.
Are you counting Women's Cup last year?
Maybe. Is that the only time that's the only time they beat us, isn't it?
I want to say that they beat us last year, a year before, once.
Okay. Well, it wasn't last year. In the season last year, we drew both games. I fully remember that.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. This is a fairly evenly matched team. They just happen to typically be higher up the table. But the interesting part is that we will be without Alex Chidiak, who's already in Australia, and Savannah DeMello, who's already left for the U.S. camp. We don't lose any of our other World Cup players until after this match. So we have Kanu and Tembi and Ari. And who's the other one? I just drew a blank. Wong. Thank you for helping there. I'm fairly certain the four of them do not leave until after this game. OL Reign has, I think I counted five or six players between U.S. call-ups and Canada call-ups. That they're going to be with us. Is it seven? Yeah, they're going to be with
Rapinoe, Lavelle, Sonnet, Cook, Huerta, Heidema, Quinn.
There you go. So, those are seven very big names for OL Reign.
Yeah. The U.S. players are already on the plane. Heidema and Quinn, they should be departing tomorrow.
Yeah. So before this, yeah. So there's all of this to say, I feel like there is a massive, massive opportunity for Racing in this game.
So before I start in on the previews, I'm going to make a point on calling out when there are actions on the field that were noteworthy that involves one of those seven players.
Well, yeah. One last point I want to throw in here is that the seven players you named, most of them are attacking players. The thing we didn't mention of the six players that we're losing for the World Cup break, we're keeping our entire defense intact. This defense that has allowed now only two goals in the last like six or seven games. So big opportunity. Sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure we were really breaking down what's happening here because I'm excited about this Saturday. Go ahead.
All right. So looking back at their run of form, their last two games, they have an aggregate possession of 47%. And mind you, the Houston game from 2 weeks ago, it was 51%. So their possession in the game against San Diego, who is not traditionally a really high possession team, they had just barely above 40%. It was pretty rough. In the last two games, they've had 16 shots with five total on target and a 75% pass accuracy.
Yeah, that's not as good as you expect from them.
Yeah. In the Houston game, they were held to a single shot on target. So starting there, it was a 0-0 draw in Houston. And for the noteworthy bits, in the 13th minute, Heidema, who is gone, gets in on goal, has a good look, and it goes just wide. In the 45th minute, again, this was a 0-0 draw. Houston's down to 10 players. So Houston played an entire half down 10, and OL Reign still registered a single shot on goal that game. In the 53rd and 60th minute, Tullis Joyce was forced to make excellent saves. I mean, she is easily one of the best keepers in the league, and she will be staying around unfortunately for us. And then in the 90th plus two, the only reason why they squeaked out of Houston with a point was a miraculous goal line save. So out of this entire game, they had one big chance, one shot on target, being up a man for an entire half. I mean, not what you'd expect somebody, you know, top quarter of the table. The next game, they actually won against San Diego 2-1 in San Diego. In the eighth minute, Balser pulls down a header that was an excellent cross from Quinn, who is gone. In the 47th minute, San Diego pulls a goal. They were just completely unmarked in the 6-yard box. I mean, that's the kind of defensive lapse that they don't really want to give us. I mean, we're not really clinical on finishing, but I mean, that's the kind of missteps that you cough up goals for no reason, which they did here. And in the 77th, Huerta, who is gone, played a really good ball into Balser and Rain Wynn. So out of all of their notable segments of play, there were none that were not directly from the play of somebody who is gone. Now, that's not to say that they're toothless, because, I mean, they've got Balser, they've got Tullis Joyce, they've got Fishlot, they got Ciara King. I mean, there's still a lot of danger there, a lot of threats. But with their current run of form and who they're missing in this run of form, I don't see this being much of a challenge. If we go into this respecting this game like we should, I mean, we could win 2-0. And that's what I'll call it.
Calling it 2-0. I wrote down 2-1. Just, yeah, I don't know why. Whatever. I'm not going to break down my prediction. I just sometimes look at it and go, this feels right. Okay, so you're saying 2-0. I'm saying 2-1. Both of us calling a win. I feel like if Racing does not come away from Seattle with all 3 points, that for me will be when I say we're not making the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at where the point values lie, I try to post with some regularity. There's a chart that shows where the individual teams are moving up the point value table, which shows you, you know, point trends. And there's a pretty clean line that currently stands between 6th and 7th. 6th and up, they have 6 wins or 7 wins. 7th and down, they have 3 wins or 4 wins.
Yeah.
The line is clear as day. And we really need to find a way to get on the other side of that. And if we don't pull points from OL Reign, I mean, what are we going to do? Continue feeding on the bottom? All that's going to do is put us at the top of the bottom.
Yes, because Racing is currently sitting 5 points out of 6th place, not counting goal difference. And 3 points at OL Reign and 3 points in the next game at home against Kansas City could, just depending on, you know, what other teams do, be enough to get us there. So this is the opportunity. This is the time. Which leads us into the next game. Like I said, Kansas City here in Louisville at home, Friday, July 7th at 8 p.m. So Kansas City is second bottom of the table. They just, I feel like they kind of trade places between Chicago every now and then for who's in last. So what have they looked like recently?
All right. And their last two, 50% possession, but that's offset by 44% in their last game. No shortage of offensive power, though. 26 shots, 14 on target. They've actually outproduced us in the last couple of games, and we had been league leaders in both. With a 79% pass percentage, which that's serviceable, not great, but aggregate over two games, I mean, that's one of the higher ones that we've called out in our previews. I mean, this is a team that's, I think these numbers say that they're starting to look up.
So let's start with who are they losing? Who will they not have by this game? Obviously, Dabinia. Is that the only one?
That's the only one.
Oh.
Yeah. But they're losing Dabinia. I mean, it's not, they're only losing Dabinia. They're losing one of the best players in the world.
No, 100%. That's a big loss. But also, they're only losing one player. So, but it's at home here in Louisville. And we've already thumped them a couple times. So we should feel confident. Okay. Well, break it down.
Yeah. So, game before last, I have a really interesting game with the Washington Spirit. Kansas City wound up losing 2-3 at home with this one. But this is one that, if you were a neutral, honestly, really fun game.
I turned this one on late when I looked at the score. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to turn this on.
So in the very first minute, Kansas City gets on the score sheet with a fox in the box with Wunderkind Michelle Cooper just in the right place in the right time. And I mean, that kind of positioning, I'm really starting to wonder if that she's not going to be, you know, more of a poacher, because this is not the first time that she's just simply been in a good place for a ball to land at her feet for a really good goal.
Is that the one that set the record for fastest opening goal in the NWSL?
It might be. 23 seconds?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, 23 seconds. That was the fastest opening goal.
And Michelle Cooper is going nowhere. We are going to have to deal with that. 23rd minute. Kansas City scores a penalty from a lucky PK. I mean, if you go back, there's a ball played into the box that just happens to barely graze an outstretched arm on a player that wasn't looking at the ball. Lucky. In the 36th minute, Kansas City actually gets a really good goal through traffic from Sanchez.
Washington did. You said Kansas City.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I absolutely scribbled the wrong direction arrow there. It's like Sanchez. Wait. I felt weird when I said it.
Yeah.
Sanchez through traffic. Can't say anything about that. It was, I remember that one clearly now. There's just not a whole lot that you can do when the shot's low with a lot of legs and the keeper doesn't get a chance to track it. 43rd minute, Kansas City goal called back, and it was fair. I mean, when you look at the replay, it wasn't close, but they did let it play through, which is a consideration that we don't get, apparently. 82nd, the Spirit scores from a corner. I mean, it wasn't anything egregious. You know, they just simply got higher than everybody else and got the ball on frame. In the 87th minute, a really good stretch of form with the Spirit just putting together a really nice sequence. I can't fault Kansas City for it. I mean, it was a well-defined team goal. So, I mean, out of all of this, the only one that really stands out to me for Kansas City is Cooper. And I get the feeling that with our back line, those looks aren't going to be really forthcoming. The next game, Kansas City actually landed in Orlando and pulled all 3 points, winning 2-1. Now, that doesn't say how kind of lopsided the feeling of the game was. Kansas City, they wound up having to absorb a little more pressure, and they really didn't look like the stronger team. But just the same as, you know, us playing Gotham, even though the numbers went one way, the score went the other. In the 18th minute, Orlando pulls wide on something that should have absolutely been in on goal. In the 29th minute, Dembinha from way outside the 18-yard box. I mean, probably a third the distance between the 18-yard box and midfield. I mean, just a rocket from downtown. But we don't have to worry about that because she's going to be gone. 45th plus one, Kaiser scores Kansas City's second goal from poor marking in the box. I mean, we know Kaiser. I mean, we know better than to give her an open look on goal. And that's one of two people that is really going to be their offense. So if we can shut down the offensive brilliance of these two people, and I know I've said this previewing them before, we're going to shut them down. And considering that we've managed to do that while they have Dembinha, I'm very confident that we'll be able to do it this time around as well. In the 51st minute, just to underscore, Cooper got another really good look on goal from buildup, which just absolutely cements her that just because Dembinha is gone doesn't mean that it's the CC show. And we do have to watch both of them, especially now that Cooper is really starting to come into her own on the season. And then in the 58th minute, Marta gets one back on a penalty. And I agree it was a penalty, but I just don't think that the lead up to that is something that you could really look at being a miss on Kansas City's part. So I'm confident that we are going to be able to shut down the offense that they have left, calling this one a clean sheet. And I dare to be bold. I'm calling it 3-0.
Well, you have a tendency to be right on the clean sheets. I have a tendency to be wrong. But I am also calling a light show party at Lynn Family Stadium with a 3-1 win. I just noticed there have been 13 regular season games played in the NWSL so far. Kansas City is the only team in the league that has not tied a single game this season. They have 4 wins and 9 losses.
Weird.
They have 0 draws, which is strange. But
yeah,
it doesn't really mean anything to the prediction. I just wanted to point that out because I thought it was interesting.
Weird.
So, yeah, we're both calling for a full 6 points out of the next 2 games. I think these are both league games.
Yes.
Challenge Cup games don't start for a couple weeks after that again. This is the chance. This is the chance. This is the moment. This is the time. You get one shot, however the rest of the song goes. started that thought in my head, and then it just all left. So, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is our shot, because if we don't pull 6 points from these 2 games, honestly, I don't think that it's going to matter too much about the Angel City game, because we will be scrambling to climb up the table in any meaningful way.
Yeah. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime. Anyway. all right, fourth official has lifted the board. We're now in a stoppage time. Couple things to do here. First of all, Michael Shaw, friend of the pod, if you're listening, listen up. Cody has something to say to you.
Michael, I'm sorry. You were right.
Ooh, what was he right about?
So he called me out on my bowl when I said that Kaylee Real wasn't a huge hit to lose in the expansion draft. And I still maintain that there were people that we could have lost that would have hurt more, but I got to call out that she is currently tied for first with Julia Lester for blocks per 90. So that is definitely something that it shows that I was at least partially wrong. So, Michael, yeah, you got it. But before we move on, I just wanted to throw out, since we got to cover the Gotham game in this episode, seeing Farrelly come back and absolutely ball out does my heart good. And not only that, but Gotham is also signed Manishim, where they're playing together for the first time since their time at the Thorns. And I hope, I feel that this goes to show that the league is in a better place now. That after everything that happened, that they're back in the league and they are back playing again. That they feel welcome and safe doing so. And that makes me really, really happy.
Yep. Well said. Our final point this week is a follow-up from something we talked about in our last episode. After the San Diego game, Casey Stoney dogged our pitch, said some very nice things. In the past week, Casey Stoney entered the find out phase as she got fined by the league for making disparaging comments. All we have to say here for comment at Lavender Louisville is sweet poetic justice.
Yeah. She wants to be petty. You know, I'm completely okay being petty right back.
Definitely not above being petty. Well, there's the final whistle, which means that's our show for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at LavenderLVL with your thoughts and comments on today's show. We will be back in 2 weeks, so we'll see you then. Bye, everybody.
Lavender Louisville is brought to you by Joe Havelda and Cody Rue. Music by Tyler Lance Walker Gill. Logo design by Ryan Simpson. Contact Lavender Louisville on Twitter at LavenderLVL or email lavenderlouisville@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.